Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective. I almost messed that up.
Dude, I know. Sometimes
I almost said where we encourage you to rage on.
Sometimes I really, have to think about it. Almost every time I almost mess it up.
Well, do you remember when I did mess it up?
Yes, I do.
Enter that audio here.
I mean, I've definitely messed it up before, too. I've definitely messed
it
up.
Not like that, where I just didn't say anything. I just was like...
I usually say the wrong thing, and then we do it again.
Yeah. guys, do you remember, way back, 7 months ago when we started this podcast?
Yeah.
And we would record 2 episodes in a night?
Yes.
Well, we're back to that.
Yeah, we're back to that. So, I just think our schedules are such that this makes the most sense.
Well, and also we want to start bringing you guys more content and more things. So in order to do that, we kind of need to
cram it in.
Do most of our shit in one day.
Yeah.
And I think that our second episode that we do is always just a little...
more fun.
So we are back at our 2 episodes a night routine, and we're going to come at you with some of this week's stuff, because if you didn't know already, you're listening to the mini episode, which is our What's in the News episode, which is where we tell you guys things about things that we read in the news.
Right, and I will start this off by saying that the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings are still going on right now. I am kind of tuning in and out of those. I'm not paying a ton of attention because I think, and not to be a Debbie Downer or start this on a down note, but I think it's pretty inevitable that even though he is highly unqualified, that he will be confirmed, and that bums me out super fucking hard because...
it's hard to watch something when you know that it's,
right.
going down.
And you know that, we will be losing some of our rights. It just depends on which ones, as women particularly. But anyway, so we're going to move on from that. When, I guess, there is a result from that,
then we will
absolutely talk about it and talk about the worrisome effects that might have for us. But in the meantime, we're going to move on to something else.
Let's talk about tennis.
Let's talk about tennis.
Let's talk about tennis. My favorite sport. I love Serena. Not a fan of tennis. Love Serena. Love Venus.
I love playing tennis.
I like badminton.
Oh, really?
We would always play badminton in gym.
Those are all good for me.
Tennis is it's a heavier ball. It's a little bit more aggressive. I don't have a lot of upper body strength.
Tennis is if you want a workout. Tennis is a fucking workout. You actually run and,
Nah.
But I enjoy tennis.
I've never played tennis. Yeah. I've never had a tennis lesson. I've never done any of that stuff. But boy, do I love Serena Williams.
I do too.
And boy, do I still think so highly of her.
Me too. Okay, so we are going to talk a little bit about the U.S. Open and what happened here.
We covered this at the final.
At the final, we talked about the U.S. Open a while ago about her cat suit and her tutu, which are badass moves that Serena made.
Yes.
Well. Okay, so she's at the final, and she is playing she's 20 years old, a 20-year-old. Her opponent is Naomi Osaka.
Yep.
And...
who, by the way, Serena Williams is amazing, and Serena Williams is, her hero.
Right.
And I just think of that, everything for me always comes back to figure skating when I think of sports.
Right.
And it's I love hearing about, I remember when Sasha Cohen was young and she was competing against Michelle Kwan, and it was oh my God, I'm on the same ice as my hero.
Right.
You get starstruck,
And I will say, everything about this was just such a shit show.
It could have gone great either way.
Yes.
Because
it could have been beautifully
Serena Williams
inspirational.
Is amazing, and her opponent is Japanese. It was such a great. Or she's from Japan.
She's Japanese Haitian. She's half black, half Japanese.
So either way, there's such great representation there.
Yeah. Which I will say though, I want to
so
say
ugly.
It annoyed the shit out of me that people kept referring to her as just Japanese, because I'm she's half black though.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then did you hear about the cartoon that they drew of her? They drew her as a blonde woman. Serena Williams looks fucking horrible.
That cartoon is super racist. We can put it in with this episode so that you guys can see it on our Instagram. But so yeah, it should have been the greatest of all time up against this amazing up and coming, tennis player. She's like Naomi
Osaka. It's totally like the rookie versus like the veteran,
right?
You
and
know?
And both extremely talented. Like, yeah. Who was it? Billie Jean King, I think, said that Naomi Osaka is like the future of the sport. Like, yeah. She's like, she's gonna be the one who takes us into the next level of
yeah,
this sport.
Definitely.
So that's what you're watching, and it should have been something so
positive
and incredible.
Yeah.
And instead. And I'm not sitting here saying that I'm advocating for having, like, emotional outbursts of this magnitude. I'm not. But the fucking ref, or the umpire, whatever he's called.
The umpire, yeah.
He was so... I think he just had it out for her. Like, he was yeah. nitpicking her so hard,
I think
Serena.
He does, too. But can I interject a little bit on
yes.
the sexism? Because
of
we
course.
Talk about... emotional outbursts.
Yes.
So, let me find these tweets. James Blake, who I believe is a retired tennis player. I read a lot of stuff today and I can't remember everything. And he tweets... Actually, first of all, I should say an ESPN writer, Ramona Shelburne, tweets, "Would be nice if some of Serena's male counterparts had her back and admitted they've said a lot worse to the umpire."
Absolutely.
"I know I've heard a lot worse from the NBA players directed at refs."
Oh, for sure.
James Blake tweets, "I will admit I have said worse and not gotten penalized. I've also been given a quote-unquote soft warning by an ump where they tell you to knock it off or I will have to give you a violation. He should have at least given her that courtesy. Sad tomorrow, well-played final that way."
Right. I mean, and yeah. And so what when I said that, I wasn't trying to make that gendered. Like, to me, when John McEnroe went off, like, that shit wasn't okay either.
Right. There should have been something that...
Right.
It shouldn't be sexist if an outburst is an outburst. And
I'm
kind of going out of my order of notes a little bit, but I love Trevor Noah, and he said some
oh, yeah.
really amazing
He's
things.
Amazing.
So he says, "It's been interesting to see how the discussion has evolved. People on one side like, Serena loses it on the court. Loses it. She's hysterical. She lost it. And it's like, yo, we never say that about NBA players. We never say that when LeBron is fighting about a foul.
Right.
He's like, I thought that was a foul. We never say LeBron lost it.
Right.
When baseball players rush the umpire, they're never like, they had a meltdown. Look at all of them throwing a tantrum. They're just like, it got really passionate. Look at the passion in the game. Tempers
right.
flaring. Then with Serena, they're like, she needs to calm down. She's lost. It's like, yo, what's a sportsman or sportswoman will do in a game?
I think it is both sexist and
yeah.
racist. I think there is like an underlying tone of... Black women are loud and angry. And,
yeah.
and you know, whenever black women express...
They're seen as being dangerous and violent.
Right.
Yeah.
Or just like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, she's out of control.
Yeah.
Whenever it's just an average expression of anger. And
yeah.
it's something that also...
And standing up for yourself.
When you're dealing with athletes at this high of a level, you're
yeah.
in the final. There's a lot of adrenaline. It is not unusual. I mean, look at the way that... men in, or people in, video game competitions lose their
yeah.
shit when they lose
yeah.
a game.
Yeah.
Look at that. And
yeah.
this is magnified times 100, plus the feeling of being treated unfairly, because
yeah.
his calls were so fucking nitpicky.
Unfair.
They were just nitpicking
yeah.
on every little thing she did wrong.
Right.
And when she called him a thief...
Yeah, he added another violation.
Yeah, just...
So... To kind of finish Trevor Noah's quotes, he says, "We're not living in a world where people are treated the same. I'm not saying that Serena shouldn't be punished. I'm saying it the other way around. It's the other way around. I'm saying now the focus is on the guys. Why aren't they being punished?"
I agree.
And then he adds a little bit of comedy where he says, "Either everyone fights or everyone gets punished. Now, I personally think everyone should fight. I think it's more fun. I want to see rackets smashed. I want to see people dissing empires." Umpires. dissing empires.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I was saying, it's not that it should be all or nothing. It's like, it should be equal.
Yeah.
If you're going to let other people get away with these kinds of outbursts where they're literally breaking rackets on the field...
You shouldn't be
or on the
punishing
court.
Women... or people who are not men, you know, any color and whatever.
I just think it's awful.
And then drawing cartoons about them, I don't know. The
right.
whole thing to me just seems really,
well,
like,
and I think
so blown out of proportion.
I think we're also extra sensitive to it because the way, can you, when was the last time you ever saw someone who was the greatest in their sport being treated this way? Like, the way that Serena Never. Is treated is unbelievable. Like,
yeah.
She, at She's every so turn, scrutinized. At every
turn. She
can't
turn, do anything right.
No. And so, to further what happened here, when Osaka won, it was just kind of devastating because the crowd booed.
Yeah.
Because they were upset that Serena didn't win, which totally takes away from the joy that this 20-year-old incredible tennis player should have felt.
But then Serena did something wonderful, us.
But then Serena calmed the crowd down.
Yeah.
She tried to get them to stop booing, and she went and comforted Osaka.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It's beautiful, but also I just feel, because it hurt my heart because this woman it's her first U.S. Open.
She beat the greatest.
She beat the greatest.
Yeah.
And granted, like, some shitty circumstances,
but
she got named the winner.
It's not her fault.
It's not her fault. She got named the winner, and she cried.
Yeah.
And not of happiness. Like, she cried because
people were booing
her. She was upset.
Yeah. And to add, you know, insult to injury here, to put some salt in the wound, you know, so she had three violations. One of them was because they said that she was being coached, which is like, I'm sorry. Like, that's what a coach is for. I don't know tennis.
Yeah, she
but
was
like,
talking to her coach on the court.
Like, is that not like
a, I don't know. I guess.
Like, I don't understand. And then she broke her racket, which was another violation. And then she called the umpire, Ramos, a thief. And that was another violation for verbal abuse. And so on Sunday, the United States Tennis Association said that Williams was fined with $17,000 for the game.
Fuck off.
$4,000 for the coaching warning, $3,000 for smashing her racket, and $10,000 for the verbal abuse. $10,000 for verbal abuse for calling somebody a thief.
That's when he was being really unfair, too.
He was being
it's not
really
like she
unfair.
Was out of line.
And it's a thief. She's not like, you fucking asshole.
Right.
She said, you're being a thief. You're taking my point from me.
Right. Yeah.
That, to me, you know,
in a highly competitive environment, like, she's trying to win. She's an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I just thought the whole situation was disgraceful in every way, and I feel for Serena because it sucks to have to defend yourself all the time whenever you are the greatest of all time, really, and then it also sucks for Osaka.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, that sucks for you because, man, this should have been one of the happiest nights of your life.
Yeah.
And it was rudely taken from
like,
you.
Like, it's such a Kanye Taylor Swift moment. I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm totally kidding. I have to pee really badly. Can I be right back?
Yeah, let's pause. Okay,
I feel better.
Yeah?
My bladder is empty.
Good.
It's fine.
On to some positive news.
Good.
John Legend is the first black man and only second black person ever to EGOT.
And the youngest.
He's not quite the youngest. He's
what? I heard he was the youngest.
He's the second youngest. He missed the youngest by 8 months. He's 8 months older than the youngest to ever EGOT. So if you guys don't know, EGOTing means that he has now an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony.
Yeah, like that dude does not get credit where credit is worth. I feel like he's not, like, sensationalized enough in, like, celebrity culture, which I think is really good for him personally. But, like, we need to give credit where credit is due of, like, the just unbelievable talent that guy has. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
He can do fucking anything. Like, I love Chrissy Teigen, and I love following her because she always, like,
she's hilarious.
She, like, drops him down a peg and all these things, yet she just constantly is like, what can't this man do?
Right. I mean, if those two ever split up, I'm going to be devastated. I'm like, I don't believe in love anymore if the two of you split up.
They're great. But also, at the same time, if they do split up, I feel like both of them are such, like, wonderful, mature people that it would be like,
they'd co-parent.
It just wasn't working anymore. So, you know what I mean? It would be, like, such an amicable, like, wonderful
thing.
It
would be a Bruce Willis, Demi Moore situation where they, like, co-parent and, like they all have Thanksgiving together.
And it's all good. And, like, I mean, I love John Legend. And it's funny because he won this Emmy for his performance in Jesus Christ Superstar.
I think it was actually for his producing credit.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah, which is interesting.
But he played Jesus.
Yes, he did.
I've never seen Jesus Christ Superstar. But the kid that I nanny for became obsessed with it. And I was watching it, like, all the time. And, like,
Fucking love that guy.
Love him. There's another guy in that show that I really, really like too.
I love him.
But so he is just so unbelievable. I love him.
He joins only 14 others who have received this, which to me, including 14.
Including like Audrey Hepburn and what was another, and Barbara Streisand.
Mel Brooks, Richard Rogers. So, I mean, but to me, 14 seems low.
It's
like,
very
that's
low.
Not a lot of people at all.
No.
And some of the people on the list, who I don't know if they're including in this 14 or not, but like Audrey Hepburn, for example, a couple of her awards were awarded posthumously, like after mm-hmm. she died. And then when it says that he's only one of two to EGOT, there are other people on the list, but they had honorary rewards. Like, they had, like, awards. They had, like, honorary...
Lifetime achievement.
Yeah,
like that kind of thing.
Oscars and things like that.
Yeah.
Whereas he earned all of his through projects that he actually worked on.
He's, like... a hustler, my God. And he, and I feel like that was like a goal for him, because he's like, I'm gonna take this part because this is bringing me into television, and this is bringing me, like, I feel like he wants to be a part of everything and be the best at everything because he wants to keep pushing himself to be better and better.
Yeah, so he is the second youngest to achieve the
Who's
award.
The youngest, you know?
The youngest was one of the guys from the Book of Mormon.
Okay.
I don't remember his name, but he was the youngest. But, I mean, only by 8 months. Like, this guy is John Legend is 8 months older than he was at the time that he got his EGOT. And he achieved it in the second fastest time. So
yeah, it was quick.
Yeah, from the time he got his Grammy, it took him 12 years, but that's not a long time to
especially
win these awards.
Especially for someone who is primarily seen as being a singer.
Right.
To get a Grammy, and then, like, his Oscar was only, what, 2 years ago?
Something like that. So
it was Selma.
It was Selma. So 12 years ago, he got his first Grammy win in 2006 as Best New Artist. And then he went on to win 9 other Grammys. So this is a guy who has 10 Grammys.
Yeah.
And then he got an Emmy just a couple of days ago, or was that yesterday, as the producer for...
No, I think it was 2 days ago.
Jesus Christ Superstar. He has an Oscar for the song Glory in the movie Selma.
Yep.
And he has a Tony for his producing credit in the musical Jitney. So, cheers to you.
Yeah.
I love you.
Raw fucking vote.
You have been our Feminist Bay Friday.
Yep.
A couple of times, or just one time, but we love you.
We could do it again.
We could totally.
And because I just need to join in with Chrissy Teigen. Hey, what a wonderful kind of day. Because people say he looks like Arthur.
No? Oh, that's so cute.
I know. This. Have you seen the picture of Luna, his daughter, like, holding a stuffed Arthur?
No, but I love it.
Arthur, you guys, okay, quick fact about Madigan. I watched Arthur every morning in bed with my mom.
After school.
No, I watched it before. So my routine in the morning from when I was, like, 5 until I was probably even in, like, 5th grade, and I would watch it by myself because I was just so used to having it on, is that I would crawl into bed with my mom and dad. I would have chocolate milk, and I would sip on my chocolate milk, and I would watch Arthur, and then I would get ready for school.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning. And it was like, I've seen...
I loved it.
I've seen it all.
I didn't have cable growing up, so it was almost all PBS.
All the PBS,
like,
yeah.
I watched Arthur, and
Clifford
then...
Clifford the Big Red Dog?
I watched
Between
Clifford the
Lions?
Big Red Dog. Between the Lions.
Reading Rainbow?
I watched Reading Rainbow.
Sorry.
One of my favorite moments in my adult life was I went to the Geeky Awards and got to see, they awarded LeVar Burton a award, and I got to see him on stage and hear him sing me the Reading Rainbow song. Like, it live. So that was amazing. But
did you ever watch Community? Because they have a whole thing about, like, LeVar Burton.
I started Community. I liked the first, like, 2 seasons, and then I kind of, like, fell off of it. Not that it means a good show. But, yeah, man, PBS, I watched all of those shows. I would rush home to watch, like, Zoom.
Dragonfly. Dragon Tales.
Dragon Tales. Boomafoo.
Oh, wait. Real quick, can I tell you my personal PBS story?
Yes.
Do you remember Dragonfly TV?
Mm-mm.
So it would have different, like, it would highlight on certain, like, you know, young kids in science or young athletes or young things, like, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would like, highlight them and tell their stories. PBS sought me out when I was, like, 8 years old, and I had just started competing in skating, and they wanted me to be part of Dragonfly TV. So it was, like, me and a couple other people, and I guess they were doing it all over the city as well. And so I just remember them interviewing me, and, like, I'm a little kid, and I don't understand that, like, I'm supposed to come off as my best self. They're like, what do you eat before you go to skating? I'm like, ramen noodles and Snicker bars, like, whatever. I'm 8 years old. And they're like, what do you, like, they're asking me all these questions.
They're like, we're not going to air that.
No, well, like, this is just, like, the audition, basically. And then they had me skate for them and this whole thing. And, like, they came up to my mom and they were, like, really interested in me. And it was this whole thing. And then turns out they choose somebody else. Like, we just never heard from them. And then it's funny because years later, I switched skating clubs and I heard one of these kids mention Dragonfly TV. And I went back and looked it up on YouTube. And it's these two kids that were, like, nationally ranked skaters who got it, which makes sense. But I was so butthurt. I'm like, they liked me first. So that's
my own. It was mine.
They gave me some, like, squishy toy or something like that. Like, it was just such a slap in the face to, like, young Maddie.
You
just
know,
being like,
you know what's weird is that I have my own PBS story that I kind of, I didn't forget about it, but I forgot it was PBS related. They had a nationwide competition for writing your own, like, children's book. They had kids write children's books.
Yeah.
And I wrote one, and it was all about, you had to write it and illustrate it, and I got, like, third place, and it was...
Congratulations!
I wonder if I can find it. They, like, made you a hard copy, and then you all, like, met at a Barnes & Noble, and they, like, you got to, like, read your book.
Whoa!
Yeah, and it was, like, my brother's name is Christian, my older brother, and it was the day that Christian cleaned his room, and it was, like, all of the things that he found, like, under his bed, and, like, in his closet.
He could be a genius!
I mean... I've not done anything with it, so here we are.
You should.
Here we are with my genius.
You should.
In a closet recording a podcast.
I think that we are perpetuating the genius.
God, I really should write children's books.
I always
books.
Wanted to be on that, like, in between the Arthur episodes where they would show, like, the kids in the classrooms
yes!
and stuff. I remember once I got in trouble because I would start, like, humming, like, background music when I would do things in school. Like, my teacher would be reading, and be like, and she'd be like, Maddie.
Like, I'm sorry, does background music not just happen in life? I love PBS, man. I could gush about PBS all day. I mean, it's almost worth having a child just to have them watch PBS.
Just watch PBS, anyway. All right, so that's our...
That was PBS Corner that we went off on right now.
Thank you, John Legend, for bringing us to PBS. So...
Also, congrats, John Legend.
I mean, like, you're cool. It's fine. So now, usually we end on a positive. Today, we're going to end on a somewhat sad note.
Just reflective, I feel
like. Reflective, thank you. So, 17 years ago today, because we are recording on Tuesday.
17 fucking years,
dude. Can you
believe that? That's insanity.
That's crazy.
I feel a million years old.
I agree. But 17 years ago, September 11, 2001, there was a horrible tragedy in the United States where two planes hit the Twin Towers and they collapsed, and a plane also hit the Pentagon. And nearly 3,000 people died in the Twin
Which is
Towers.
A massive number. I
it
feel like sometimes people don't realize
massive number.
How many... I remember the first time it really sunk into me, like, 3,000 people.
Yeah.
Like that, and at the time, I was living in a small town where that's the population of the town I was living in at the
Definitely.
Time. Like, that's the entire town gone.
Definitely. And the attack was planned by Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. And, spoiler alert, bin Laden was killed in May of 2011, so a little bit over a decade after the event happened. And he was found during a U.S. military operation ordered by President Obama. That was one of the big things that Obama did during his presidency, was that he found Osama bin Laden, which I remember the big joke at the time being, like, he played the best game of hide-and-seek.
Yeah.
Like, he did. I mean, he stayed hidden for a very long
time. Yeah, I mean,
so.
And side note, if you want to learn a little bit more about Osama bin Laden and also, like, what they found when they found him, there is a Behind the Bastards episode on Osama bin Laden, and it is so bizarre because you're basically like, all right, this was kind of like a... It doesn't... You think of Osama bin Laden, especially us, because we grew up with 9/11 as young kids. Like, you think of him as being this kind of, like, genius or something.
Yeah.
And he wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, he was just kind of...
I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah, listen to it. And then also, they go into detail about the things that were, like, in his bunker with him, which you're like, whoa,
interesting.
Shit.
So... the reason, I mean, not only do I not want us to forget, because hashtag never forget is something that happens every year around this time, because I think it really is important, and it's
of
important
course.
To be teaching the kids who weren't alive during this time, because it was a time where suddenly our safety and our way of life and this, you know, comfortability, I feel like, was taken from us.
It was forever altered.
It was forever, and you know, the way you go to an airport. There's so many things that have changed because of that and the way things are different. Yeah,
it occurred to me today that, like, I was 11 when 9/11 happened, and it occurred to me that my brothers, who, Maceo was born in August of 1999, and then Bishop was born in January of 2001, neither one of them have ever experienced going to the airport without the TSA.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's good that we made those changes, but it is interesting how
our life changed forever.
Yeah, and we have talked about in the past about the, how we are, like, really the nostalgic generation, because we remember a time that was different, and how 9/11 psychologically, whether we want to believe it or not, has changed us mentally. And it is weird, because I was from Minnesota, and it happened to me so far away.
Well, I was in Missouri,
and I didn't even understand it, but there was something that changed in me that day that it's hard for me to understand.
It rocked our security as a nation, I think it doesn't matter how old you are as a child. I was 11, so I feel like I was enough to kind of, like, know a little bit about what was going on, but, like, it rocks regardless of whether or not you really understood what was going on.
You knew that there was something going on where your life was never going to be
the same. You felt a shift because everyone around you was freaking out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the reason also that I really wanted to discuss it today is because we have an asshole of a president and his behavior is always inappropriate. And he met people with fists in the air.
Yeah. I saw that picture.
In Pennsylvania for the memorial service.
Double fist bumps.
Yeah, like, great. Just horrible. And he met in Pennsylvania where he would be paying his respects for the fallen heroes of the United Airlines Flight 93. And on the way to the service, the president tweeted, 17 years since September 11th, exclamation point. Like, that's such a weird tweet to...
I truly believe that something is really deeply wrong with him mentally.
It's
like,
I don't understand. Like, is there not somebody who's like, let me just take care of your Twitter
for you? No, I mean, I don't think so. Like,
exclamation point, to me, it seems like it's a celebration. You're making it
exciting. Yeah, and it's very strange. And I think it's already weird that in this country we don't have something that's like a collective. Like, in other countries, there's, like, I was listening to the Daily Zeitgeist and they were talking about 9/11 and they were saying how, like, in Japan, to commemorate Hiroshima, they have a nationwide moment of silence.
Well, they did do a moment of silence last year, Donald Trump did, on the moment that the planes hit. But this year...
But we don't do it collectively as a country. Like,
no, it's not something...
In our places of work, they don't say, like, this is the moment of silence. Like, we don't do anything.
And there should be. And I think that's why, for me, like, I don't stop talking about it when it's September 11th. And it's something that is just so, like, ingrained in my mind. And I always found it so creepy that it was 911.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there was always something that was really ingrained in my brain.
Yeah.
So... Another tweet from Donald Trump today, he honored Rudy Giuliani, his lawyer, for serving as mayor of New York, tweeting that Rudy is a true warrior. Which I'm like...
Yeah, Rudy Giuliani, man, it's horrible. Also, hold on, let's also not forget that Donald Trump... Because I was about to say that Rudy Giuliani really played this 9/11 thing to his advantage.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As far as, like, he became America's mayor, and he has...
And he played it to be scared of other religions and other cultures, and, like, played it
Well, and it's what kept him at the top of... He would be nothing without 9/11, truly.
Yeah.
And so, along that vein of, like, playing it to your advantage, let's also not forget that Donald Trump... when the plane hit the towers, do you know what he said?
He said that he now has the tallest building in Lower Manhattan.
Yes. So there is your sympathetic president. 3,000 people are dead, and what does he care about? That Trump Tower is now the tallest building in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
Because the towers are down. That's who he is.
It's just...
Don't be tricked into thinking he fucking gives a shit about you. He doesn't. He doesn't care how many Americans die. He is the worst narcissist.
Yeah.
And that's all he gives a shit about.
And it just, it's one of those things for me that if you're not an American, I'm sure that you have your own sort of understanding of a tragedy like this. But I feel like there's, you always know somebody who knows somebody or know somebody who was somehow directly very much affected by this.
Right. I mean,
and it's such a, to have such an emotional investment and to hear somebody else who was not only an American, our president, but somebody who was right there.
Right.
Right there.
And probably knew people who were pretty directly affected.
And he says that he knows 1,000 people that were there. And
I think it does speak to our privilege a tiny bit that I understand it might make us sound like shitty Americans given the things that happen in other countries. Yeah. But for us, we felt, I think America, in maybe some of our arrogance, felt so fucking secure.
And untouchable.
And untouchable.
Because we were always told that America is the greatest country in the world. And that's so how I was raised
for this to happen, where there was, like, a bombing in one of our iconic buildings in one of the biggest cities in our country.
That killed so many.
It was, it just rocked all of our security. Yeah. Like, no one ever really felt, like, safe again.
Yeah.
You know?
And look at where, what has happened to our country since.
Yeah.
I don't think that we've ever felt
safe. Well, that was the beginning of that kind of, like, Islamophobia. It made it okay for you to be like,
well, and
America first, it's USA, true. USA.
But it also, I just don't feel like we've ever felt, we've always just felt threatened, and we've never felt safe since as a country. Where I grew up so naive and so patriotic.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah.
With this episode, I'm going to post a photo of the poem that I wrote at the first anniversary of 9/11 because, like, little Maddie did very well.
Yeah.
It's pretty beautiful, actually. But he, Donald Trump also claims that he heard the people across the Hudson River in New Jersey cheering, the Muslim people
Which
cheering.
Which is a fucking lie.
There's no evidence.
There's no evidence
that
he's lying about that. And to speak further on that, Rudy Giuliani says that he didn't see Hillary Clinton. She didn't show up at Ground Zero, and there are pictures of them together.
Yeah.
There's pictures of Rudy Giuliani walking through Ground Zero with Hillary Clinton right behind him.
Yeah.
So
It's something that I feel, as tragic as it is, it's important for the future generations to understand why it's important. And I asked the kid that I nannied for today, I said, did you learn anything today about what this day means? And he said, no. Granted, he's in first grade. It might be a little bit much for first graders. But I did tell him a little bit about what today means because he has an interest in that kind of stuff and in history. He really wants to know everything like that. And I don't think that we should necessarily be shielding our children, you know, shield them from graphic details.
The horror, but also,
but they need to understand the things that happened before and after and how our country has changed.
And how the world has changed. Because that war in Iraq that we went into after this, which
He always asks me to explain the war. And I'm like, I don't. He's like, who won? And I'm like, nobody
No one won.
Won.
And no I, one won.
It's hard for me to explain but because completely, I'm like, they used this attack as a means for
a war. As an excuse.
Because George Bush the second, like, George W. wanted a war because his father always wanted a war, and he never got a war. So he was like, this is how I'm going to make a mark. And he did, and he was a piece of fucking shit. And the fact that I'm saying, oh, at least George Bush was better than Donald Trump is such fucking horseshit.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the issue with George Bush was that it was, George Bush was dumb. It was the people around him that pushed for that. It was like Donald Rumsfeld and those
Donald
people.
Donald Trump is also pretty dumb, and it's the people surrounding him that
right,
are
they enable him,
it.
But also Donald Trump wants it. I think it's different. Not that
he
it makes
wants
it
the
any
notoriety.
Better. Not that it makes it any better, but it's the fact that 9/11 not only changed the landscape for the United States, but it changed the landscape for the world because it got us in. We destabilized. We effectively, because of this, destabilized an entire region.
We did. You know? Well, and, like, it was economically so damaging. Like, we still have not recovered. There's been so many things, you know, we as a country are before and post 9/11. You know what I mean? Like, you really can see such a drastic
difference.
Right.
I mean, I think we're, you know, this veers off just a tiny bit, but I think we're before and post 9/11 and before and post the 2008 stock market crash.
Yeah.
Those two things combined really did destroy a lot of what we consider to be, yeah, like, the American dream. Because the stock market crash destroyed what little we had left,
yeah,
of kind of, like, a middle-class economy.
Yeah, you know? Which, you know, there was a seven-year difference. But to me, I just, the way that I imagined it in my head, it was kind of one on top of the other.
Because we were still in, like, I graduated high school in 2008. So, for me, it was still all lumped into my childhood.
Yeah.
You know, like,
agreed.
So, agreed. Do you have, yeah, to close this out, do you want to tell a story?
Yeah, well, we're both going to kind of share our personal memories of 9/11. And so for me, I, as I've mentioned before, I went to Catholic school for most of my childhood, and we always had prayer circle in the morning. And I'm not very religious anymore, but there is still something about prayer and the power of prayer, and especially as a child.
Power of fellowship, too, like community.
Right. Well, I struggle from severe anxiety, and as a kid had really bad separation anxiety from my mom, who actually worked at my school, which made things actually really difficult. And I just remember having prayer circle and prayer time be a time that I could be very introspective and pray for my mom and pray for me. And feel a sense of calm. And I just remember my principal, Mrs. Schmidt, coming in. My teacher was Mrs. Johnson, and saying that planes had hit the Twin Towers. So for me, I'm like, it's a plane crash. Like, what's the big deal? Like, it's sad. Like, it was horrible, but I didn't understand what the
big
deal was.
Didn't have a frame of reference for the Twin Towers. Like, neither
did
I.
Yeah, and everything that happened or whatever. So I just remember my teacher, Mrs. Johnson, she was an older woman, very sweet, so gentle and so kind, sitting down and just suddenly having an intention for us to be praying. We didn't go around the circle and say what we were praying for. We didn't have any sort of personal thing. She just had us all. We took several moments. It felt like a very long time. And I remember the room was dark, and she would always have candles lit. And it was very, like, very seancey almost, you know? And I just remember feeling so confused and hurt. And then, like I said, my mom worked as a lunch lady at my school, and I asked her what was going on, and she was like, you know, we'll talk about it when we get home. And when I got home, she was making jewelry at her jewelry table, and we had this tiny little television, and it was replaying it over and over and over again. And I knew that there was something wrong because everyone was talking about it at school, but seeing it for the first time rocked my world. And going to school the next day and hearing everybody say that we're going to go to war, you know, my tragic mind, I'm like, oh my God, we're going to, like, we're going to be in the depression again. We're not going to have any sugar. We're going to war. You know, like, it freaked me out. And it was so jarring to me. And I was so scared. I didn't want to live that life.
I think it's interesting that you guys weren't sent home.
No.
You guys were not sent home from school.
No.
That's interesting.
No. It's interesting because Chris's dad is NYPD. Chris was sent mm-hmm. home because he grew up in the Bronx.
Well, I mean, I was in small town Missouri, and they sent them home. I say them because, all right, so here's my 9/11 story, which I only think is interesting because of the crazy random happenstance that I was not at school that day.
Really?
I was not at school that day because I had pink eye. I had pink eye, and I remember very distinctly. So the night before, I don't know if it was someone's birthday or something, but we went to the park, and my mom had left her keys, like, had left them in the, lost them somewhere in the grass or something. So I was home from school because I had pink eye, but my mom let me go with her to the park the next morning, in the morning, to go look for her keys. So I went with her in the morning, and we were looking for her keys, looking for them. I think we finally found them. We got back in the car. My mom turned on the car, and the radio was like, this thing has happened.
Yeah.
Right? Which was weird because we have the radio on. It wasn't on talk radio. It was on
like top
the radio,
either.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you have, like, these radio DJs whose job it is now to convey to you that, like, this terrible thing has happened.
Yeah.
So I remember my mom starting the car and then kind of, like, stopping.
Yeah.
And, like, listening. And I was kind of like, what?
Yeah,
like,
I had the same reaction. Like, what is the meaning?
What's
behind
wrong?
This?
Like, obviously, it's weird that, like, obviously they're giving us news, which is strange. But I kind of didn't take it all in. And then she drove home. Like, I shouldn't really say she was just like she was scared or worried or whatever. But didn't really talk that much. We got home. She immediately went in and turned on the TV.
Yeah.
And then it was the same thing. It was like every channel you went to, it was over
and
over.
That footage is ingrained in my mind.
Right. And, like, I remember my mom was crying. We were living with my aunt at the time. My aunt came home. She was crying. My cousins were at school. They got let out of school and they came home. Yeah. And I remember for the next day or two, because I don't think I went to school the next day either, because I was still sick. It was literally, I don't know that we turned the TV off. It was like the TV was on the entire time. Everyone was in, it was nonstop 9/11 footage. Like, that's all you watched. And I remember when we went to go pick up my cousins from school. We were in a small town. Again, we were in a small town, about 3,000 people.
Yeah.
And we went to go pick up my cousins from school, and people were panicking. The gas prices were up to $5.
Yeah.
And we're talking about 2001, where gas prices were like...
a dollar.
in small town Missouri, you're talking a dollar. Typically, gas prices were $5, and cars were around the corner. Because people were like, we're going to go to war... oil prices are going to skyrocket. Gas prices are going to skyrocket. People were panicking. They were, like, going and filling up.
It was so scary to me that the initial thing was, like, war. And I was like, hey, I don't want to go to war.
Yeah. It was really scary. And I just remember that because it was such a weird way to find that out.
Yeah.
And I wasn't at school, you know?
Yeah, it was weird. There was something about being at school where I didn't get all the information right away. And our teacher just kind of had to go on with things as normal. And, you know, I don't know. It was such a weird day. And there's a lot of things that happened afterwards that I remember really, really clearly. And that, I think, is kind of the birth of my political activism in a way. And realizing that our government is corrupt and knowing that this war was wrong and not wanting it to happen. And hearing from my mom and dad some very progressive conversations, and I would love to hear from my mom what her memories of that day are, you know, because she's a grown adult at that time.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, if you are alive, if you were alive at that time and you have a memory, you will never forget it. It's the same thing whenever, like, older generations talk about how, like, you will never forget where you were when Kennedy was shot.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
you will never forget where you were when 9/11 happened.
Yeah, like, and it's something that I reflect on every year, and I think it's important because while we shouldn't just always dwell on the bad things, I think it's important for us to remember and to carry on that story of what happened and to remember the 3,000 people that died and the amazing people who fought for their lives in that time to save as many people as they could.
Right.
And we cannot forget the horrible things that have happened, but we also need to be forever hopeful and thankful.
Yeah.
For the people who have done good things.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. So I know that this has been a little bit of a longer one and kind of an unusual What's in the News episode, because we talked a little bit about news and then kind of it was really reflective.
But
on,
I think it's very important for all of us to reflect and remember.
And you know what? I am so fascinated by where you were at 9/11 stories. So if you have those that you want to share with us, please write those in, because I do think it's interesting. It's affected people differently in different ways.
Yeah.
I know there was a Twitter hashtag and a thread and a chain that went around about people who wear hijab or Middle Eastern people and what their experience was like after 9/11.
Gosh, I can't
and
imagine.
How tough that was too.
Yeah.
So
I want to hear about that.
It affected everyone differently. Yeah. So if you have those stories, please write those into us. We want to read them.
Yeah.
We want to kind of bond with you guys over those things.
Yeah.
It's a scary thing, and it's a sad thing on so many fronts.
I remember
so.
I had to go on a plane a month later because my golden birthday present when I was 9 was to go to Disney World, and I was so scared to get on a plane.
Yeah,
I mean,
everything was so destabilized.
Yeah.
And, so definitely write us in.
Please do.
You know, write those stories in. Write your sister solidarity stories in. Basically, anything that you want to talk to us about.
Yeah, I mean, we are still taking coming out stories.
Absolutely. Motherhood stories still.
Yeah. Whatever you guys want to send us, honestly, like, we don't really have many stipulations right now about what we're taking. We just want to hear from you guys. And your stories, I think, really do make this show, and I think they really do help a lot of people. So don't feel like whatever you have to say isn't enough. Always send it in.
Yeah, totally, totally.
We want to make you a part of this whole experience.
Absolutely. So you can email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram. We post a lot there. That's probably where we're the
That's
most active. And you can DM us at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. You can get us on Facebook, Twitter, at YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. And yeah, we just look forward to hearing from you. We hope that this kind of chatty episode was cool with you guys. It was helpful, I think, for us to do.
It was good feelings.
It was good for us to do, kind of cathartic. So
yes.
I guess.
With that being said, thank you for not stepping on my line.
I didn't.
I'm totally kidding. I just like to give you a hard time. You guys, I love Kate, and I would never actually be mean to her. With that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.